Oh, and oh, here's another story I didn't do. Damon Albarn has a mullet. That's all.
That's wonderful. I know he did he performed at that Glastonbury, but
yeah. For a while, Damon Albarn was trending on Twitter. Why? Gorillaz movie? No, he has a mullet. That's why.
I love it. I love it.
All right. Okay. So let me reset the time.
Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about the music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I'm Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is a podcast. Episode 188 of this fine establishment because,
the Krusty Krab reasons.
We've got four albums because we were off last week because we did, because, you know, union liable breaks.
SAG-AFTRA.
Exactly. But four albums we've got for you. This week we have Exodus by Posthumous DMX. We have Sour by Olivia Rodrigo. We have Harmony House by Dayglow. And we have Cavalcade by Black Midi.
It was really close.
Cavalcade.
Pretty good. Yeah, four albums because, yeah, we missed last week.
We have a single, but we'll talk about that in 1 second.
Yeah. 1 second just passed. Let's talk about it.
All right, let's talk about it. Fuck it. we dived in it. So there's a theme, and there's a song called Thin, and there's a group called The Smile, which is one Sir Thomas York and Sir Jonathan Greenwood and their friend on drums.
Yeah.
Basically, Tom and Johnny got together, said, we want to make music, and then they had one of their guys who also plays a different band.
Tom Skinner, Sons of Kemet. And
Go and play, and they were their special guest on the dumpster fire of a live stream that was the Glastonbury Festival.
Live at Worthy Farm, yeah. Yes. A lot of people weren't able to watch that live.
A lot of people were locked out, and it was bad. So... Yeah. The performance was amazing, and there was one song that Tom and The Smile posted on their social medias called Thin Thing. I watched the whole performance, but basically that song is Johnny Skip Loop mixed with Tom York's solo work. Also, Nigel Godrich is producing everything too. Forgot to mention that part. So
obligatory.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
really rocky for a lot of their tracks.
Yeah.
Compared to what Radiohead has been more of the past two albums and of Tom York's solo work. It's definitely more of a rocky stuff, so it is a little bit different.
Yeah, feels more rock-like. I'd say just from Thin Thing, it feels a little bit like in Rainbow's Disc 2, because it's just like they're kind of messing around, sort of like a jam session, very close to the guitar, drum, rock aspect of things. But yes, playing around with the time signatures to pure and true Radiohead. You're not going to be surprised if you have followed these folks before. And if you've followed these folks before, you might be interested in the fine Radiohead bonus episode that we are purveying. We just released both parts of it over for the holiday weekend. Hope you enjoyed that and can check that out. But if you haven't yet, make sure you do listen to that episode. It's really comprehensive. Part one is about Radiohead the band. Part two is about their solo work. And it looks like part two is already out of date because now we have this.
And we'll let you know if The Smile released an LP. It kind of sounds like they are because they debuted eight or nine original tracks. So one can hopefully assume that they'll release one this sometimes, so that's why we're only talking about that, not the whole performance.
Yeah. You've listened to the whole performance. I've only listened to a single, so we're perfectly balanced for the singles rules. You won't be hearing a peep out of us until you actually get the thing.
Exactly.
So until then, make sure you check out the Radiohead bonus episode for that. Mm-hmm. Wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or also on YouTube at youtube.com/audiofacepod. Our bonus episodes are awesome. People love those episodes, so make sure you check out that one. We've previously done bonus episodes on Caro Caro Benito, Daft Punk, MF Doom, and even like last year and previous years we did Gorillaz, Coldplay, was a Lil Wayne one. There's so many of them, so check those out. And yeah, before we get into other things, I'll also just mention Power Report. Check out that podcast when we do political side of things. PowerReport.world. That's PowerReport.world for all of the links, social media, podcasts, all the stuff you want for there. And this episode, this podcast, like many of the other podcasts in the Syndicate 23 Network, all two of them are produced by Dead Music 666 Productions for the audio quality, making that sound nice. Thank you, Peter.
Sorry, Peter.
Yes.
My obligatory, sorry, Peter.
Yes. And now, having done all of that, let's jump in pretty quickly to our first album. This is Posthumous DMX, Exodus. It is 13 songs, 40 minutes long. And yeah, DMX, we learned about his passing barely a month ago.
Yeah, we were going over like when he was admitted to the hospital, was on life support and all that. We got you through that whole sad saga and stuff of his death. So... it's interesting with posthumous albums. We've done a couple posthumous albums now because we've been a podcast for 4 years, so it kind
of
happens.
We've already gone through the whole thing of how do we feel a little icky about posthumous albums, how we're doing them. We've gone from that to now expect a month
after it. But this, I guess this album was already in the works and stuff of it, so it was already planned with DMX. So this is a little bit easier of that because I would like to say just about all of it was done, just like the audio mixing and everything else that you normally do. Like post-production wise, it was done already. So it's not like a true, like a Lil Peep or whatever other ones we've done where they're
it's not like a full completed project. So they're taking what is surviving from that artist and piecing it together. And by they, I mean like producers we were joking about a little bit off camera, tend to bring their A game to these like posthumous productions compared to the artists who are living. But I mean, like many posthumous productions, usually I can't tell whether this is because of what DMX was already working on or because it's posthumous. But there's stars all over this entire thing.
It's
stars, I don't just mean like, oh, you have a lot of features. I mean like...
You get Jay-Z, you've got Nas, you've got Lil Wayne, you've got Alicia Keys, you have Bono?
more on that later.
More on that in a bit. But you have a lot of, you know... Top musicians. I mean, you have the Jigga Man himself, Jay-Z, on there too. So that's just, there's a lot, and almost every track on here has features. So it's just insane.
Yeah. You start with That's My Dog, which is like a really like classic sounding DMX song. Yeah. It's like rough, has this gritty voice. It's very much
like, and it's like, it's really choppy. I don't know. Actually, I really didn't like this opening track. I thought it was okay, but.
Yeah,
it's a stylistic thing I don't normally like.
How about Bathroom? That's a whole lot of spinach, whole game full of gimmicks. Make a fool out of yourself for a post with academics. We are not the same. I am an alien hovering over your city, shutting down all the stadiums, wiping out everything in my radius. Don't play with us. Y'all ain't made enough. Shit pop off. We don't blow it up till we blow it up. Cats better slow it up. Y'all niggas know what's up. My niggas throw it up. We all know that. Got niggas missing the action. Where are they at? See, you niggas never really been stuffed out. I actually low-key like Bath Salts,
which is surprising because I do not like Jay-Z normally. I think his rap is... tends to be overrated and is really boring to me.
I'll give you that.
But with Bath Salts, like the beat, everything, I was like... I go really fucks with Jay-Z being on this beat. And then Nas coming in. I've always liked Nas growing up. Lost Tapes is one of my favorite rap albums. So with him going on there too, I really like Bath Salts a lot. Like, I listened to this song a couple of times.
Yeah, I figured with a Nas feature that... he also features on Walking in the Rain near the latter half of the album. But I figured with the Nas features, you might like that a lot. And I think it complements...
Awesome. It complements each other very, very well.
And I was just going to say, that's the theme of the album is complimenting, because you're taking DMX, who is very much a relic of the 90s, and you're doing as best you can to bring that era into the 21st century, into the second
and
decade.
And don't do the Uncle Rappy stuff that we've been having the past couple years.
Yeah. They're here, like Jay-Z, Nas, and future songs like Lil Wayne. They're here. It's weird thinking of Lil Wayne as an uncle rapper, but like,
I know.
They are all here. They perform well to the beats. The beats are made so it like works for them really well, and the beats are modern and fresh. Thank you, Swizz Beatz, for doing and a lot of the production here. Which is to say that it all fits. It doesn't feel just like a...
It does not feel uncle rappy. It doesn't feel like a project.
It doesn't feel like, oh, we're here to
together.
Do like a reunion tour kind
of
thing.
It's it feels like these we're splitting flows are going at it. Like,
we're making a damn album.
Exactly.
And then that's great to hear, because like you want a lot of... We've reviewed a lot of posthumous albums that feel very slapdash and put together.
Yeah,
it
there's
feel
a lot like that do that.
It doesn't feel like it does the artist justice.
Posthumous Pop was pretty good. That's probably like out of all of them, that was probably like the best example of a decent
We're talking about Pop Smoke's album. by posh the way, for people who are not as music brain broken as we are. yes. No, but like you go through, you get money, money, money with Moneybag Yo, which I thought was like a fun little refrain here. Some nice little fun refrains from DMX, like he still got it. Like, say cheese, now I got pictures of what a bitch is. It's just really nice.
You have Hold Me Down with Alicia Keys, which is, I like that track a lot. I've always liked Alicia Keys.
Yeah.
But with her vocals, everything, and then DMX's rough voice, like it kind of complements each other because they're literally polar opposite on this vocal spectrums.
But. And I'll say the first four songs are like you're really hitting heavy for an album as you really would.
Yeah,
really would. But like with Hold Me Down and pretty much every song after that, this album takes a little more of a softer approach. Definitely softer from if you're expecting like classic '90s DMX Rough Riders anthem.
It's gonna give it to you.
DMX has always been an emotionally complicated person. He's written songs that have been like very emotionally complex and like deep for a while. It's just now you have other artists bringing themselves onto that. Mm-hmm. In some ways performing really well, like Alicia Keys. In some ways a little bit iffier, like the Bono thing. I'm not sure how I am with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting. We could just dive in. Because after Hold Me Down with Alicia Keys, you still keep with that solo stuff with Skyscrapers with Bono, which is just an interesting track because...
Super interesting.
Become much harder to fight and it lasts longer. That's what it's always been. Joy with the pain, dark with the light, sun with the rain, but with the right perspective, there's something to gain. Look for the good and the bad, not the sun when it rains. Ocean cold turn to diamonds and blind men's visions become skyscrapers. Like, Kendrick Lamar did a thing with U2. It's just interesting as well, where they're randomly getting, like, Bono's randomly getting on to a rap album. But it's just, it's so polar opposite from Bono's voice and then DMX rap. It's just
it's a very rough transition. It's like trying to, deep state train nerds out here, it's like trying to run a light rail train on heavy rail tracks. It's just like something just super doesn't fit here. It's a rough transition.
Yes.
Hopefully no one's on board. Might be a little shaky. I found that even with the Kendrick Lamar thing as well, where, like, you almost have to make the song abruptly change because that's how polar opposite the two things you're pulling from are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it like barely works. I don't think it works that great but it doesn't ruin the album.
No, it doesn't ruin the album. It's just kind of a question mark.
Yeah.
After that, you have a little skit thing, which is actually perfect because you need that transition to then get back to your harder stuff. Because then you got Hood Blues after the skit. And
West Side Gun, Bane the Butcher, again, more heavy hitting right there.
Yeah, exactly. And that just sets you back up for that old school hip hop style, which I enjoy.
Yeah, again, like old heads will love it. New heads will bop to it. It's like,
that fine balance between the two, which, you know, we've been wanting to hear for a while. So it's good.
Yeah. You get more just like heady stuff. There's Walking in the Rain, Eggs to Skit. You'd have Letter to My Son, Call Your Father, which is a DMX kind of poem that, in a typical DMX fashion, it cuts to deep with the emotions, but it's not like sprinkling anything. Like, it's not beating around the bush anywhere. Followed by this like Usher and then Brian King Joseph singing in the background.
Yep.
Of like, if you know a lot about like DMX's life and like the struggles he went in through his childhood and like passing that on and not passing that on to his childhood, like it's hard not to realize, especially since he's passed recently, it's a very emotional song that's there.
Oh, for sure.
And then you get to prayer at the end, which not a lot of people know this, but DMX was very, very like religious, Christian religious. Not really even in later parts of his life, but just as like a part of his career in the later 2000s. He would never like do a Kanye West push it down your throat kind of thing. But there was always this like dichotomy balance of, yes, I'm this like hard like rapper here doing all this shit and drugs and all this stuff, but there's reflection, there's repentance, there's trying to be a better person for like the people who come after me. He's constantly playing around. And I like they had that in the album as it ended as well.
And there's one track a little bit earlier with Diamond Bar Snoop Dogg. You have a Take Control where they sample Sexual Healing. And it's so hectic, I slip out and slip back in to redirect it, connect it from the hip to the dip. She say she wanna fuck with a crip like Nip, so I dip. Yeah, I bark and I bail and get back into the ocean like a shark or a whale. Don't tell. When I get that feeling, ooh. And that's kind of like the whole theme around the whole track, which is actually a pretty cool track.
Yeah.
Even though Snoop Dogg is probably the most Uncle Rappy part of the whole album.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because Snoop Dogg has held his own as like, yes, he's an Uncle Rapper, but he's like a brand, he's a staple, he's around there, he's like in the industry. But Snoop in 2020, like it's been a lot of decades of working with Snoop here. It's kind of like, getting a little bit slower here. But I think as an album, as a posthumous project, this is like one of the better ones, especially since we mentioned Pop Smoke's posthumous album. It does a good job of honoring the artist. It is an album that the artist, I think, would have wanted it. And I think you get that benefit of DMX nearly finishing this project before passing away tragically. So you at least have that. But it sounds really nice. It does all the artists who are on there justice. And Swizz Beatz was already saying, oh, maybe there's another posthumous DMX album. I don't know how I feel about that. We'll have to visit that later or not. I think this one is like a great place to like leave.
Just
on a
leave
high
it.
Note.
Just I agree.
Yeah, very good. Arbitrary Scale is not necessarily the most of a high note, and this is maybe the opposite of DMX a little bit. But this is Deadbeat Hockey Dads. These are
if you've ever played hockey or you've ever gone to like a local rink when there's a beer league or anything, you know those Deadbeat Hockey Dads that like. They yell at their son when their son is like doesn't really like hockey, but you know he'll play and stuff. Just
you know, the dad's living his life out vicariously through his child support son,
and then he like skips his daughter's stuff to go play in his beer league team, and then and he's also likes to fight guys, so he gets in fights on the rink too. So that's it. I don't know, like,
honey, I understand your dance recitals are important to you, but hockey and beer are very important to me. You'll understand when you're older and have a man for yourself. See you at dinner. Arbitrary Scale. I'm sorry if that was too triggering for some folks in the audience.
So that's hilarious how on brand that is. Anyways, okay, are we doing like styles of Deadbeat Dads or numbers of Deadbeat Dads?
I'm kind of slow this week, so let's do numbers of Deadbeat
Dads.
This is a whole
first line of Deadbeat Dads. So this is three: center, left wing, right wing. Of just like the dead bent row.
They have matching pens on their jerseys that say debtor's prison on it. Yes. Moving on throughout this fine podcast, A$AP Rocky is did a recent interview with GQ with the Bangers recently, where they're kind of talking to A$AP Rocky about his future plans, his current plans, his life, etc. And we got a few little tidbits from his album, and we'll go to those a little bit because, you know, this is a music podcast. But he mentioned recording music for a tentatively titled album called All Smiles, no relation to Tom York. He didn't confirm a Rihanna collaboration. He said the album's about 90% of the way done and mentioned a number of collaborators. Morrissey said the Smith singer has been writing, producing, and contributing vocals to All Smiles. So he's kind of like a jack of all trades, master of pissing
master
off
of racism.
Master of racism, that's a good one. A$AP Rocky had spoken with his desire about working with Morrissey in the past, saying, quote, I might have to fuck with Morrissey on some Smith shit, make some emo, real, retro, infusion motherfucking 2018 shit, man. This is, of course, in 2018. But also speaking of things in Rihanna's life. I'm sorry, Rihanna's life. Well, I guess that's another thing. A$AP Rocky and Rihanna are together.
Who gives a fuck? Anyways, more to music.
Wash some hands. And then lastly, there's the thing about A$AP Rocky and Donald Trump, which became a point of because...
Oh, that's right.
Come back ASAP. Remember when Donald Trump had Twitter? That just owned all the time, every day, all day, every day. But there's a point where A$AP Rocky was in Europe and Sweden, I believe, and he was potentially arrested. We covered that on Audio Face.
Yep.
Because of a fight that was going on at one of his concerts.
Yep.
And there's a whole thing. The Swedish police didn't want to let him go, but ultimately he had to get Donald Trump involved in it. But A$AP Rocky cleared things up a little bit by saying that, quote, he didn't help. He made efforts and he rooted for me to come home, but he didn't free me. They felt like they had a point to prove because he kept saying stuff. We knew what was going to happen, and it happened the same way they said it would weeks prior. So kind of what, I'm not going to like pull the exact clip I had from Audio Face in that time, but I'm pretty sure I said something along the lines of, I'm not sure if Donald Trump doing this is worth a damn.
It's just like Ronald Reagan's saying, I'm going to tear down this wall, and everybody's like, Ronald Reagan turned on the wall. I'm like, that's not how that works, but okay.
I mean, with Ronald Reagan, you could go the wall with the arms for hostages way, and at least this is more the wall. At least there's no trade here. unless there's a Swedish Iron Dome we're going to fight out about soon.
The Swedes have invaded Denmark. What?
Moving on, we have something entirely different from World War III. We have Olivia Rodrigo's Sour. It's 11 songs, 35 minutes long, and this is going to be a reflection on a lot of things. It's going to be a reflection on teeny bopper like stardom. It's going to be a reflection on industry plants. It's going to be a reflection on, you know, just like pop music and as it stands today, which is to say that all of these things have negative connotations and all of these things can be applied to Olivia Rodrigo in some way. But that isn't to say that this is a bad project. In fact, I think Olivia Rodrigo does a good job of taking all of those tropes of being like a Disney star who gets an album and a like very clearly like someone who the industry wants to do well, who like talent or not, we're going to prop up and put them on every single chart or whatever. The fact is, usually when you put people in that position, they come out pretty terrible, but they continue making music anyways, and it's just fodder for us to complain about. This isn't that, finally.
We're getting... This is something that I've been talking about, too, with pop music, where you're going to have more and more people who are genuinely talented getting up more because of the whole Gen Z slash TikTok stuff and other things where you, like, with the... Case in point with the whole indie discussion in our state of the music industry, if you go all the way back there, I talked about how a lot of those indie artists, a lot of those smaller bedroom pop girls, mainly women, are like exploding through the ranks into mainstream music. This is another case for that because with Olivia Rodrigo, you're not getting normal pop, Ariana Grande straight through of just, I'm going to skip. This is brutal. Literally the first song, Brutal. It's not that. You get some tropes of indie, you get some tropes of like almost alt slash grunge rock. You have obviously your standard pop stuff, you have your slower things in there.
I feel like no one wants me, and I hate the way I'm perceived. I only have two real friends, and lately I'm a nervous wreck. Cause I love people I don't like, and I hate every song I write. And I'm not cool, and I'm not smart, and I can't even parallel park. All I did was try my best.
But it's a mixed bag of a lot, which is the nice thing of it, that of an album that is very, very popular. One thing that I hear throughout the whole album is a big, like a call out to Lorde, because there's a lot of stuff that reminds me of Lorde's first album with Pure Heroine a lot, with her vocals and other stuff. And it's kind of with the tropes of her slower songs and everything in there. You could hear a lot of influences from that, which is, I think is a good thing because we both, like Lorde, she's an amazing artist, but I think that's something that people, I saw some people making comparisons to, but I wanted to get that a little bit out more into more of the mainstream thought in it, but into the music itself. Brutal's actually a good opening track because, again, that's, you get that more rocky style just out there, and it's like, whoa, okay, I didn't expect that on a pop album, so it's a good kind of way to start it off. Traitor after that, that's going to be your, I think that's the most generic song on the whole album, maybe, where it's a decent track, but it's more of your poppy style and everything, so it's nothing.
Yeah, singer-songwriter, acoustic guitar, teenage girl singing about love. Like, that's sort of the deal. I think you have some... Yeah. It ends a theme here. The production's a little bit more, like, fleshed out and thought out.
For sure.
And grander than, like, you know, when Taylor Swift had her crack at this when she was younger. Yeah. I'm talking about the original albums, not, like, the re-recording Taylor version. But, like... a lot of parallels were made between Olivia Rodrigo and Taylor Swift's beginning as well, which I think it's unnecessary to make those comparisons.
Because first off, Taylor Swift started off as country. So it's like a completely different grouping too, because she started out as like this whole like country girl. So
and she didn't start out, and Taylor Swift, to be fair, I'm not going to be fair to Taylor Swift very often, but she didn't start out as a Disney star.
Yeah, she didn't start out as Disney. Yeah. So she didn't even have that big, any platform or anything. She got it kind of just by word of mouth and then exploded from there, obviously.
Word of mouth, the internet for sure, played a factor back then.
And still free her music.
Yes.
After that, you get Driver's License, which is the song that kind of blew up and everything because it's
the lead single
and everything, which has had like millions and millions of streams and stuff. And track, it's definitely hitting for those, for your your general pop thingy of love, heartbreak, this or that. It's
yeah.
definitely like a Gen Z-y style song.
Yeah. But I have to like try to remove my, I'm 10 years older than the very sophomoric like loves, the relationships of like anything going on here. So like I have to remove myself from that as a music reviewer and go like, okay, well, 10 years ago, there was way shittier music out that I was complaining about that was supposed to fit this peg for.
Exactly. So I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's decent.
Yeah. Driver's License leads into One Step Forward, Three Steps Back, which is kind of like a part of the album where you have these softer...
Yes.
I wouldn't necessarily say jealous, even though there are like jealousy songs in here. And kind of the album is a lot about the reactions that this young girl is having, seeing... her love sought after by someone else, or like someone she liked or had a crush on or used to date and have a relationship with, be sought out for by someone else. So it's moving on with that envy, that jealousy, that kind of thing. And it takes a lot of different approaches. Like in One Step Forward, Three Steps Back, and Deja Vu especially, it's a softer thing where mm-hmm. it's kind of playful, but it's definitely like a softer approach. And then you get into other songs
after Deja Vu, you have Good For You, which is almost like the same, the opening track, Brutal, where you get more of that fast-paced rock style into it, which, I like those tracks from her. That's a decent one, too. After you have Enough For You, Happier, which then goes back more into those slower singer songwriter styles. Jealousy, I think that's where it's the most... That's the song that to me that reminded me a bit of Lorde, of like a younger Lorde, with the production, everything, with the vocals and in it. That a decent track too. But jealousy started following me. Started following me. Everyone getting all the things I want. I'm happy for them, but then again I'm not. Just cool vintage clothes and vacation photos. I can't stand it. Oh God, I sound crazy. That win is not my loss. A lot of her lyricism isn't half bad. It's a lot about like stuff as, again, as a Disney star, as I kind of burn up and trying to be your own person and all of that, which, you know, we can, I can understand that. So.
Sure. Yeah, you're sifting for some depth here, and you usually don't find a lot in these like shallow waters of like teenage stars. But like, you find a decent amount here, and like, there's a story. I forget where it was done, but there's a story about how, okay, Olivia Rodrigo is about to do an album. Every music label's like licking their chops at the opportunity to do this, but Olivia Rodrigo went with who she went with because they were the only label, I believe, it was Geffen Records, who approached her as like, we don't want to make you a star, we want to make you like blossom as a singer-songwriter. They're more interested in helping her like with the art, because Olivia Rodrigo is coming to the table with art.
Which is how it should fucking be. It shouldn't be about making money.
Yeah, tell that to a lot of the other labels she definitely talked to. You do, and again, like what's limiting here is that these are songwriting from like girl hasn't gone through full like adulthood, can't buy drinks on her own.
Yeah, yet.
So like there's a little bit of subject matter that's just sort of like limiting inherently. Yeah. But you do find songs like, I think at the very end, Hope You're Okay, which is sort of this continuing ballad to people she knew in school or whatever with like really messed up.
And some of these songs, like Happier and a couple others, she wrote, she was like 11 or 12. So it's quite impressive for that. But for a lot of the younger up-and-coming artists and stuff, there's a lot of good out there. You have Billie Eilish, who's only a year older than her, which is crazy. You have Beauty to Be, who's about the same age. A couple others that we've talked about of these young female artists who are just killing it in the game. So for a pop album, it's actually decent. It's you're getting more substantive music in your pop, which is good, because we want to hear that as music reviewers. You don't want the same old copy paste and stuff. Naturally, there's always going to be some lackluster things here and there and stuff that just comes with the genre. And you're going to always have like you could already tell it's propped up and stuff just by media and everything else. But it's not horrible, which is good. It's a good effort.
Yeah. You're looking at two folks who grew up on Miley Cyrus albums coming out every year or so, and like that's your pop music, that's what's supposed to like, be accepted, but that's okay. And it was trash, and we talked about it then. But I'm genuinely saying that in this like newer generation of pop stars, they are a little bit more artistic from the jump.
For sure, from the get-go, because they grew up with more music in their livelihoods, in their family and stuff, and you can tell that through a couple of these artists.
So. Yes, so... Yes, it's pretty clear that Olivia Rodrigo would be like of the tick boxes you would have in industry plant. okay, sure. Yes, it's teeny bopper kind of stuff. You have to tick that box, yeah. But for her first album and for this first project, it surpasses expectations really, really thoroughly to something that, like, you would enjoy even if you're, like, the most cynical music reviewer and listener. And also, this is just her first album. This is when, like, you're getting a lot of the cheesy crap out of the way so you can build on top of other things. There's a career ahead of her, and this is one of those careers I'm actually eager to watch from for a Disney star. Mm. Arbitrary Scale, the reason those Disney stars exist.
Debbie Hockey Dads.
Yeah. This is going to be four deadbeat hockey dads, including Justin Bieber's dad.
I like it. And they all have a camouflage hat, some Oakleys from like 2005, and a goatee.
Yeah.
100%.
Disney dad apparel.
And
sure.
they drink a Busch Light.
Anheuser-Busch. Living off of their child's residuals from the Disney shows. Making sure they don't do drugs by doing the drugs for them.
Yes. So an arrest warrant was issued for Marilyn Manson in New Hampshire. Or New Hampshire. How do you say New Hampshire? New Hampshire.
That's an American one. It's New Hampshire. Also, This is a very... Benedict Cumberbatch could play Marilyn Manson in, like, the documentary.
Apparently, though, a photographer alleged that Marilyn Manson spat on him during a concert in 2019. Doesn't fucking surprise me for one second.
Yeah.
But Benedict Cumberbatch could have him play him in that picture.
See, just this right. photo, right?
Right, with the purple suit and everything. Yeah, kind of purple suit, though.
TMZ reports that Manson spat on the photographer during the show and that each charge faces a possible jail sentence of 1 year and a fine of $2,000 or less.
Beautiful.
Two counts of misdemeanor, simple assault because of, I guess, two spitting things. We were talking about the Josh
Homme
Award.
One spit wasn't enough. Two spits is good. So the Josh Homme Award for most physically abusive frontman. Because, you know, he like destroyed the camera. Also, didn't Offset destroy a camera in Target or some shit, too?
Well, that's a different thing. Yeah, Offset destroyed someone's iPhone 6 for, like, recording them doing, like, just on a Target run. Literally, Offset was doing nothing but, like, at the Target checkout line getting diapers. Not that this is in defense of Offset or anything. But we're almost at my favorite story of the week. But we'll wait.
We'll wait. So, anyways, third album, we have Dayglow. Is an artist that I recommended a little bit ago. You got Harmony House, which is 11 songs, 34 minutes long. His second LP. And, again, going back... Dayglow's an artist I've been listening to for the past couple of years. He's one of those, again, younger artists, up-and-coming Indian stuff that his debut album I thought was very good. The thing that's unique with Dayglow is he's like Tame Impala, where he does everything. He produces everything more or less. He plays every instrument, mixes it himself, and does all that stuff. So very, very talented in that regard. And it's an interesting album. There's some stuff in here. I'm really enjoying some stuff in here that I think is kind of lackluster. Compared to his debut album with Fuzzy Brain, I think it's called.
Yeah,
his debut.
We definitely talked about that as a music recommendations episode, I believe, in 2020, maybe 2019, but one of those.
Something like that. Yeah. So, anyways, going into it, you have something. This is the first album, which is a pretty short, like opening track,
first
only
song.
Like 2 minutes long or so, and it kind of gets you into the theme of the album. Everything, nothing spectacular for it.
Yeah, it's a synth pop record with like really punchy drums and like his sort of classic Dayglow sort of like summery sheen on the song. Yeah,
you have Medicine right after, which I really enjoy that song. That's kind of the best of this album is that sound where you have like almost a throwback-ish to 70s-ish, but updated indie 70s, if that makes sense. Not like St. Vincent's, but more in the pop sense of it where, again, like that pop indie pop style. But it's a decent track. I did like that one a lot.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It's sort of like it reminds me of like Neon Indians' particular mix of punchy drums and synthesizers, the way they sort of collide together.
The vocals definitely not, because he doesn't really, he just does it raw, baby.
I'm definitely thinking more of the instrumentation.
Yeah, I get that. And give it for a whirl there. After that, you've got Balcony in December, which are two decent tracks, but I thought they weren't anything particularly special. In the middle, you have Close to You, which is the single, which fucking incredible track. Really like that. So that's the thing with Dayglow. It's almost like Tori Amos, where you'll get like, depending on the Tori Amos album, but you'll get like three or four tracks that are absolutely incredible. And then you get the rest of the album is okay. That's kind of what some of Dayglow has been for me. His first album I liked a little bit more, but this, my favorite Dayglow track though, so far, is Close to You. Night, same situation. I beat myself up for not speaking up. Every night I can't make it right. Like that, you have all the elements of that indie pop genre that I really like, the lyrics, everything in there. It's very, very good for someone who's writing it all himself. Give him a lot of credit for it.
Yeah.
And it also shows you that he's not just a one-trick pony in it too, because the thing with him is that his song, Can I Call You Tonight, blew up. And people were saying, oh, is he going to be like a one-shot wonder or will this or that? But it's proving that he does have a lot more in him and stuff. He's also only maybe 20. Or something like that. Really, really young, too. After that, you have Crying on the Dance Floor, which is actually another good track. It's a little bit slower. You get more into that groove stuff. But after Crying on the Dance Floor, that's when it really stagnates for me. It was the end of the album, where Into Blue, Moving Out, they're okay. Whoa Man is a decent track. And Strangers and Like Ivy are all just kind of at this level or that medium level.
Yeah, they're slower. I don't know if I want to be this mean. Yeah, I'll say it. It reminds me of music I would listen to in Animal Crossing. It's just like kind of slower, sort of airy, islandish. It's like, it feels restricted though, artificially.
It feels very restricted, which is interesting for him to do. I know there's a lot more in him, and you see. So that's the thing with this album. You're seeing a bit more experimentation with him. You're seeing a little bit more what he could do with it, but now you're even wanting more from him. You're on, okay, what's the next step? What are you going to do? Can you really make a gorgeous, cohesive album? Do you need people to help you with your stuff too? So there's a lot of this leaves you more questions than it has answered from this previous album. So
it's truly like there's more like thematic range from Olivia Rodrigo, the extremely pop record that we reviewed just moments ago. More range in that album than here, where it just feels like there's more to be said, there's more to be done here. And I think there's that potential, but yeah, it's definitely just kind of left out on the field, and there's like not much here on the field to work with, sadly.
So I was expecting a little bit more, but there is some very good stuff in here throughout the album. So it's a decent second album. Again, I'm glad that it wasn't like just a Fuzzy Brain 2. It was very different than Fuzzy Brain. So, but it's leaving us wanting more. It's almost like that Roosevelt type where we want more from the artist and everything, and to see, okay, we get this sound. What's the next sound? What's the next thing that you could be working on? So we will keep you updated as always, especially with someone that we recommend. But
yes,
it's decent.
Arbitrary Scale this week. We do Arbitrary Scales
because
this is Audio Face. Deadbeat Hockey Dads. This is going to be two deadbeat hockey dads, a dad and a stepdad, who are competing with each other to prove each other right rather than paying attention to the son.
Yes, they're the ones who are trying to win over the affection of the mom, who's a deadbeat mom as well. So you can throw a deadbeat mom in there too, so why not? And it's just like beautiful Minnesotan hockey culture, like right there. And the son has like a sick bleached hair mullet, like 100%.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
The only winner is Minnesota Child Protective Services.
Moving on to our favorite story we've ever done on Audio Face ever. Ever.
I'm re-nominating J. Cole for the Noted Little Bitch Award.
100%.
So J. Cole made a big thing after releasing The Offseason. They decided to come off of an offseason of his own and decided to put his jersey back on and do basketball. Folks don't know that back in North Carolina, he was on kind of a little bit of a basketball route before he went into rapping. So rapping was his detour. So we've always thought, like, oh, maybe He'll do a little bit more basketball. So we got J. Cole hooping now. So J. Cole did it. He's in a basketball league, but it was the Rwanda Basketball League for the Basketball Africa League for the Rwanda Patriots. And he played for a powerful 3 games. And in that 3 games, let's get the stats line here.
Stats guy over here.
We're getting dangerously close to needing to do a sports podcast soon.
I'm waiting.
Coming here to Jermaine Cole for the Rwanda Patriots. We've got 5 points, 3 assists, and 5 rebounds
in three games
of basketball.
So that's rough, buddy.
So not great, not great. Definitely warming bench out there, and it's enough for J. Cole to last Thursday basically call it quits and say, thank you for supporting everyone who supported my dream of playing basketball, but due to a family matter that has nothing to do with the fact that I hoop like shit, I'm going to be cutting this season short, and thank you for your service. Thank you for your time.
Basically, he quit with a tail between his legs because he's like, I can't make it in this league. I suck.
Yeah. He said it was beautiful. It was great for him getting to be treated for all this and doing all these things. But ultimately, he's done. Congrats on that win tonight. Ready for the next game. By the way, he's dropping new sneakers. So it's good thing you're paying attention to him while he's doing this, because he and Puma have a great new deal where you can buy some J. Cole Pumas to commemorate, I mean, at least 2 of those points.
If you buy J. Cole Pumas, I'm also nominating you for the Note a Little Bitch. Anybody who buys that sneaker, automatically.
My favorite thing was A.S. Sele, the guard Terrell Stoglin, who plays in the Rwanda League, mm-hmm. who was basically caught on video saying that J. Cole's position in basketball is, quote, disrespectful to the game.
Damn. He's disrespectful to the game of hockey. Or to the game of basketball and everything that it represents.
I mean, honestly, it's to let J. Cole, for fun, just play in this. Like, we have...
Guys bust their balls all the time trying to get there, barely being paid or paying yeah. to be on the fucking team. And
like in the African League, no less, like J. Cole, just wait for the next All-Star game. Shoot up with Migos and like Lil Wayne. It'll be great. You and Quavo shooting foul shots. It'll be awesome. No.
It's brutal, but you're definitely nominated for that. That's such a bitch move.
I love it. That's awesome.
It's one of my favorite stories you've ever done on audio face. Tail between your legs, come back to America.
And he was never going to play the whole season. He was just doing it there, like, just for funs. Okay.
Funsies.
Last album of the week, we have Cavalcade by Black Midi. 8 songs, 42 minutes long. And Black Midi are an experimental group, I believe, out of England.
Extreme experimental album.
Yes. This is their second project. Their first one, Schlagenheim, was released in 2019.
Beautiful.
And featuring lead single of Schlagenheim. But no, this is...
Carl von Schlagenheim.
No, yeah, this is... very experimental alternative rock.
That's to put it lightly.
Yeah. There's some sense in here, but it's really just a lot of you start with John L.
This is a scene on Main Street when John 50 comes to town. Yes, this is a scene on Main Street when John 50 comes to town. Crowds of every age, creed, and gender are abound. Senor Kitsch sings kiss, detaining each attendee's sins. The first time anteaters lose themselves in the wings. With vigor they scratch red spots, overwhelmed by their king.
Rock song that goes like very hard into the guitar and like the sounds that are going around to it. It has these pauses in the middle of the song, these breaks to kind of keep the tempo going, but they pause it themselves. Yeah. It's just a collection of sounds moving together as a vibe. It's quite a ride.
That's an understatement. A couple of other tracks after that, you have like Marlene Dietrich. You have like, it almost sounds like, God, I can't think of... Who was the band we just reviewed? It's Dinosaur Jr. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of a slow Dinosaur Jr. track where it's just almost like sad Tom York wailing noises, but without the Tom York production, into just a really weird slowed down song. I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You have
I'll leave you to that one.
Chondromalacia patella.
That's the closest I would have done it. Chondromalacia patella. The
latter
half, the latter half of that song breaks out in this like really fun like little guitar bit.
Yeah, it's actually a fun track.
A million diamonds.
I like the end of it again, yeah, because it's like, yeah, it's like the really fast, almost like post-punk style rock going into it towards the end. The end of the track's really cool, but there's a lot of stuff that are interesting in this album. Like Slow is
It's not slow.
Slow is like you mix smooth jazz 94.7 The Wave with like post-punk and Black Flag and some random other sounds and make it into a song. Yeah. How I don't know, like, but that's what this song is.
And generally speaking, the album, like the what am I saying? Yeah, the album works for what it is. Like, this is not going to be anything mainstream or even alternative rock like album of the year. This is just an experimental project that's out there
Out there for what it is. We're trying to see what sticks, what doesn't stick, trying different sounds. Because even after Slow, you have
Slow isn't really the slow song. Diamond Stuff is when it starts to get kind of slower as an album, I'd say.
Yes, I was going to say that, because that's when you get more into almost ambience, like Brian Eno style of ambience music and stuff, where it's almost elevator background stuff, where it's not bad either. After that, you got Dethroned, where...
It's my favorite.
Out of all of it, because it's the most cohesive song, but it's cool because you have fast, slow. The vocals are really good in this track. The guitar work, everything in there. I really like this track. It's a fun one to listen to. Because out of the whole album, it's probably the most approachable for people who don't really listen to experimental music or aren't used to it. It will definitely can get you more into that album, for sure.
That's for sure.
The last two, you have Hogwash and Balderdash, which is a hilarious track.
Incredibly English.
Yeah, it's like, it's a funny track. It's just short, and it's just like a collection of sounds.
Yes.
A collection of just different sounds that slows down and speeds up. It like goes full gas at you and then stops abruptly. It's
the closest thing, and like these songs don't sound that similar, but it's almost like the song called Sympathy by Vampire Weekend, where like all the music kind of goes away and you kind of get this like guitar thing that's slowly going down key in the scales, and then once it hits that last
almost
down key
like,
note, everything else
almost
like
the
comes
end
together.
Of Helter Skelter from the Beatles.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah, and these are not meant to be like value judgments on the song itself. It's more like, what does the song literally sound like?
To try to get you an idea of it.
Yeah.
Kind of like that just brash, like fade in, fade back, where it's just a lot of instrumentation through it and nothing is quite cohesive, but it works somehow because of it.
Yeah.
So
average song on here is about 5 minutes long. You have some that are a little less, some that are a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that good, almost like shoegazy noise rock that you could enjoy in that sort of particular context. Overall, yeah, it's pretty good for that kind of like purpose that you'd have it for. And like solidly in the sense that like for people who wouldn't necessarily go towards this music all the time, like it's a decent enough listen.
Yeah.
Arbitrary Scale, this is all the hockey dads fighting at once during the first period and no goals have been scored. Like there's literally no reason.
This is a deadbeat hockey dad getting pissed that he got like outbeat by some fast kid, and he goes and he slashes the kid on his knee, like outside of his knee, and the kid's like out, like gone, and then brawl, fucking just benches clear brawl, and even the stands brawl. Everywhere.
One guy in the Capitals jersey just like throwing left hooks.
Yeah, I don't know what that guy. And we always like to end Audio Face on a fun note, and it's been a good run.
It's been a good four years
of podcasting, but we got to hang up our jerseys in the rafters and call it quits.
Because we can tell you the exact date that Audio Face's last episode will take place. That's 2 weeks from now. June 11th will be New Music Friday. And that's when, in addition to Migos Culture 3,
we've got Maroon 5 featuring Juice WRLD and Nipsey Hussle.
That's previously living Juice WRLD and Nipsey Hussle, who are going to be on Maroon 5's Very Much Alive album. I'll read this from the fader, because Jordan Darville wrote this in a way that features far fewer expletives than I can. If you're a hit-making rapper, you can rest assured that Maroon 5 are watching you and waiting for the perfect moment to pounce for a collaboration. We've seen it with Payphone with Wiz Khalifa, Cardi B with Girls Like You, and Kendrick Lamar with Don't Wanna Know, I Try to Forget, and most recently, Megan Thee Stallion's Beautiful Mistakes. Jordy, out June 11th, which is their newest album, will feature Juice WRLD and Nipsey Hussle, among others. They're also going to have...
God damn, there's a lot of freaking features on that album.
They're also going to have... YG, Steve Nicks, Annual AA,
Steve
Jason
Nicks.
Derulo.
Oh, Steve Nicks, you fucking her,
Adam Levine, and Black Bear. Yo, I'm really going to hate this. I'm going to hate this a lot.
Wait, how was... Okay. Pause for a sec. How do you feature Adam Levine when he's part of the goddamn band of Maroon 5? How do you have Radiohead featuring Tom York?
Is this one of those things where, like, remember how...
How do you have MF Doom featuring MF Doom?
Well, actually, there's a couple different ways to do that.
All right. I don't want MF Doom featuring Victor Vaughn or
this
some
is probably,
shit.
Like, Jason Derulo's song that they were like, hey, can we put this on the Maroon 5 album and, like, share records? Sort of how there was Touch by Khaled, and it was like a Disclosure song, but it was also a Khaled song, and they sort of like shared it. It might be one of those.
I guess. It's also a bonus track on Target exclusive physical release, so we don't have to review it. So cool. All right. I was going to nominate them on the spot for No Little Bitch, just for featuring yourself on your own music.
But... Cool. So it's just going to be a 12 songs long album. That's we might be able to get through that. But we haven't done a good No Chill Island in a while. You're going to get it in 2 weeks, and I don't know if we're going to make it out. So, enjoy the podcast while it lasts.
Things will be said. People will be fired. Podcasts will be ended.
For the time being, this is Audio Face. What does it mean to play us out?
Oh, dear God. Well, if you've gotten this far, you're a real one. You're a real organic. You're that homegrown oat milk. So if you want to follow us, you can follow us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter, Instagram, all social medias. You can follow me, SW Suarez, if I trust your ass. You can follow Dan if he trusts you or not, because, you know, internet life, at Dan from the internet on Instagram, at Dan from the web on Twitter. You can go follow our clips on YouTube at youtube.com/AudioFacePod, where we upload all the stuff. Listen to our Radiohead bonus episode, because Radiohead is God tier, and you don't know why, and just hear us blabbing about
Audio
music
Face.
That we
read.
Hence why Audio we are called Face. Audio Face. TikTok. Thank you for listening.
It's not democracy, it's DiGiorno.